Okay, hello. Hi, this is Dave, and this is my English Meeting podcast. And today we have a group from all over the world. So we have Jessica here. And Jessica, you're from Peru, very far from home. And then we have Esther. And Esther, you're from Korea. North Korea or South Korea? Everyone's laughing. Why? Because everyone's from South Korea. We don't have. Actually, I did meet a North Korean once. Once I had a student who was North Korean. Can you believe that? I did. But, you know, he was very shy, and he actually got out that he didn't want us to say that he was North Korean. And he lived a lot of his life in Japan, so he started telling everybody he was Japanese. So that was kind of interesting. I felt bad for him. And like some of the South Korean students were saying, we don't know what to do with this guy because we're not supposed to talk to any North Koreans. And yeah, caused a bit of a upheaval. I think they said they could go to jail if they talked to a North Korean. Do you know if that's true? I don't know.
When I was a child, it was prohibited by the government. We have to not contact with North Korean. But nowadays, it is so open.
Okay, so can you call somebody in North Korea?
No, we can't, because the system is not established yet. The phone call system is not established. And of course, the mailing is also prohibited. But we can contact with them on internet and through other country, like other country, Japan. If we have any Japanese friend,
no.
If I have a Japanese friend, then I can send some message through her to North Korea.
Phone, mail, smoke signals.
What is smoke signals?
Long smoke. you'll have to bear with us because we have just one microphone today. No, you're saying you can pass a message through Japan, but like you mean call somebody in Japan and that person calls somebody in North Korea?
We can send some mail and we can send
mail.
I don't know what it is. And of course, in person, if we have and if we know anybody who have a plan to go to North Korea, then we can ask him
some things from your Japanese.
Yes.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, if you have something you want to give to somebody in North Korea, somebody from Japan is going to North Korea, you can give it to them and they'll take it.
Yeah.
But you could not go.
No.
You can't. But if they put you in their suitcase, you could go, right? Okay, we got this. Okay, and then we have Christopher. Where are you from, Christopher? You're from France.
But my mother is Colombian, so I also speak Spanish.
Your mother's Colombian?
Yes, my father went to Colombia. He works for gas enterprise.
Gas enterprise.
Yeah, and he was going to say, yeah, he found my mother in Colombia, and he brings her back to France.
He met your mother in Colombia.
Yeah, and I was born in France.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yes.
That's great. And you were born in France.
Yeah.
And how long have you been living in America?
In America, like 6 months. Yeah, since last.
And then finally, we have another guest here. Now you're from all the way from what?
Korea.
Are you sure you're Korean?
Yes.
She was definite about that. Okay, so tell us how long you've been living here, a little longer, haven't you? This is Christy, by the way. So you're Christy from Korea, and you've been living here a little longer. How long have you been living here?
6 years.
Okay. And she's like, get that microphone out of my face. Christy's a little microphone shy. So you've been here 6 years. You've been here a little longer. So you're a little more comfortable with American culture, maybe, than you went to high school here, too?
Yes.
What high school did you go to?
Bauman High School.
Oh, you went to high school with? Really?
Yeah, right.
Jessica here and Christy both went to Belmont High School. I didn't know that. How come you guys didn't tell me?
Well, because we didn't know until the first day we met in class, and we were like, weren't you in my math class, I believe? And we're like, yeah, I guess so. But I think we only had like one class together, and that was A. And then we would see each other around the campus. What year did you graduate from Bellman?
What year?
She's like, I don't want to answer that question. That's going to date me. No, what year? Like 98, 2004? Oh, 1 year ago is your answer. Okay, I thought you were asking me a question. So you just graduated last year. 1 year ago. About a year and a half, actually, right now. Ah.
Well, the 2002 class was Luminaries. 2003 class was Thelgians. 2004 was some other name I don't remember. Do you remember the class name?
So Christy had a very memorable experience in her high school. Yes, she didn't know there was such a thing. Okay, but that's okay. Okay, so anyway, this is a good group because we have people from all over the place, so we'll have lots of different perspectives. So today we're going to start off our talk with the topic of euthanasia. Euthanasia is assisted suicide, and this is a big issue in America and throughout the world, I imagine. In America, euthanasia is, do you know if it's legal or illegal? Any of you?
In America?
Yeah.
I think it's legal, right?
Okay, Chris thinks it's legal. What do you guys think? Is it legal or illegal?
I think it's legal.
Legal? What do you think?
It's illegal.
What do you think? Legal? Well, the Korean ladies are right. Wow, they think alike. Yeah, it's illegal. Euthanasia is illegal. It's against the law, and there's been a lot of controversy. There's been people who believe in euthanasia because if somebody is, let's say, for instance, somebody is suffering, they're sick, and they're terminally ill, meaning they're going to die, and they're in pain, like, you know, in a chair or in a bed, and they can't move, they can't really do anything with their lives, and they're in pain. So, of course, many people believe that helping that person to die is a good thing. And some people believe it's a bad thing. Why do you think it's illegal in America?
Well, I think it's because the influence of religion, maybe. Yes.
What religion is that?
I don't know. What is the main religion here?
Well, basically, we're a Christian country.
Christian country. Yeah, in my country, there is no. It's. I mean, for example, in state stuff like the bills, the money, we cannot put religious stuff like in God we trust. This is not possible. The state has to be separated from the church, so there is no interference. So much interference of the religious people in that kind of questions, national questions.
Yeah, I think religion has a big part of it. It's interesting you mentioned that because in America we have a big separation of church and state too, but it also comes into play, and we do have it on our money. It says in God we trust, and you know, the founding fathers and the politicians say this country was built from, you know, Christian values, so we should keep that. But anyway, that's a separate issue. Esther. Yeah, okay, here we go.
It is not only the religious matter. I think the most precious thing in the world is the life. And what other religion ignore the preciousness of life? I have a question about that.
Okay, you're talking about preciousness of life. And I think on both sides, this idea exists. Because when you say preciousness of life, are you saying if somebody is ill, in bed, terminally ill, they're going to die, and they're suffering, are you saying since their life is precious, we should try to keep them alive? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I worked as a medical doctor, right?
Okay.
And so I saw a lot of patients who terminally ill, really ill. You can't imagine how they suffer from their pain. I really feel sympathy to them. So sometimes I thought, oh, they'd better die. But we can use a lot of analgesics. There is analgesics, injection, painkiller. Analgesics? Analgesics. Yeah, there is so many ways to keep the life. The only thing, the only annoying thing to people is the because of the patient, the other family's life is ruined.
I got something to say. I believe family members get affected by that because they emotionally they get affected seeing their family being in bed sick, like they are not able to move or to do anything. So family also get affected by it, and people both suffer, the patient and the family.
Okay. So it looks like we've opened it up to the family is suffering a lot. And the patient is suffering now. And then Esther was saying how, well, we can give painkillers so that person isn't in so much pain. But let me ask you this, or maybe I can ask Christy this. If this is just, if you were in that position, if you were very sick and you really couldn't move that much at all, and you were in bed, and maybe they gave you some pills or drugs for your pain so you didn't feel pain, would you want to continue living in that situation?
No.
And why not? Why not?
I don't want to bother any other family members by me. And I don't think the painkiller is going to keep me.
It's okay.
I don't think the painkiller won't help me as much like normal people. It'll bother me a little, even though it kills the pain a lot. So I would want to die.
Well, okay, and I'll get to you in a second. I think I tend to kind of agree with what Christy's saying in the sense that, okay, even if I was taking the painkiller, the quality of my life would be, you know, very marginal. I mean, I would maybe be conscious. Like, let's say I'm in bed right now. See, I'm at this table. I got four people with me here for this podcast. Yeah, you're my family. And I'm like this. And I'm just like, that's my life right there. I'm just, now, okay, this is not video, so you didn't see that. But I just, almost, a little more than a vegetable. I mean, I know that, you know, she's maybe my mother. You're my brother, you know, and family members and things. But I can't really talk to you. If I can talk, it's very minimal. And if I were to speak personally, I wouldn't want to live under those conditions. I would say, please pull the plug. Pull the plug now. Okay, but Esther has an idea. So let's see. What were you
going to
say?
I have a question to Christy. And if the government or society provide you a good system that they can take care of your life without your family, then do you want to live or not?
If I can't live same as normal person or I can't be better, then I don't have any reason to live anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes into the quality of life issue from this perspective is like, what is life? Now, and, you know, Esther brought up early on this idea of that life is precious. And I think what life is means different things to different people, you know? Okay, Chris?
I think that they should first make a law that says that you're the one who decide for that first. If you're in a pain, you can decide if you want to fight against the dead or to just to die. And after, your decision has to be, if you want to die, has to be reviewed by experts. I mean, physicians. And they can tell if you're really in pain. If they understand, they have to give their point of view first, and after, they have to decide if they can kill you. I mean, first it has to be your decision. That's all.
Okay, but let me me ask. Okay. So you're saying if you want to die, the physicians should be able to approve that based on a certain amount of information. This is where it gets difficult, though. So what do you do, though? Where do the doctors say it's okay? Like, oh, he's in this much pain, so he can kill himself. Oh, but she's not in this much pain. She can't kill herself.
When there is no, when it's sure that you're going to die anyway. I mean, when there is no more hope.
We're all going to die.
Yeah, but I mean, when about your pain.
About your illness.
When it's sure that you cannot.
If it's terminal.
Yes, it's, if it's terminal, when you're sure about that, you should let them. Or maybe a certain percentage, if there is 90% chance that he's the person is going to die, they should let him. I mean, depends on the doctors. Right.
I mean, that's why this issue is so interesting and complicated because, okay, like you said, well, if they're 90% sure, well, there's going to be so many people who are going to say, okay, you may be 90% sure, but that means there's a 10% chance this person's going to live. How can you give up on that? You know, think about somebody special in your family or, you know, something like that. You know, this is where it gets really complicated. Whereas this opinion is saying, what is life? If life is just lying in a bed, staring at a wall, and, you know, maybe being fed by a tube, this perspective, like Christy was talking about, is saying, well, you know, that's not really life. But I think maybe you guys over here, I'm not sure about your opinion, Jessica, but I know Esther, I think, has something to say about the preciousness. How do you feel about the issue, Jessica?
I agree with Christy. If I would live under those conditions, like being in bed, seeing my family suffering, and just even the painkillers don't help me, I don't find any point in living no more. I would rather just take the decision and for others to respect my decision, I don't want to live no more. That would be my answer. I would first hear the doctor's opinion, what my family say, although my family are going to say, like, no, we don't want you to die, but I think they want the best for me, and the best for me is, like, not to suffer no more. So I would like for them to respect it. I would also hear the doctors if they say, like, you're already, like, the disease advanced a lot, and there is no solution, no answer for that, then I would take that decision to live no more. I would like them to respect that.
I'm not sure about myself and also Christy and Jessica's opinion. Can we keep the idea that I don't want to live like that situation? Because I saw a lot of patients, if they recover their consciousness or from their suffering, they said, I don't want to die. So 9 out of 10 patients want to, please help me. I don't want to die now. I have to do something, this one and that thing. And I'm afraid. And most of us are afraid of the life after death. I don't know how can I express about that word. Yeah. So I think people are afraid of the other world after we died, and they think about their families or their descendants a lot. So I'm not sure about myself, I want to die or not. And there is some criteria that physicians can make a decision. The most important thing is consciousness. If the patient has consciousness, then we can't assist kill him.
We can decide for them, for that patient.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're saying if the patient has consciousness, that that patient needs to make their own decision, although. In America, it's actually illegal to commit suicide. So if the person, it just gets very complicated. I mean, if the person says, okay, I'm conscious, you know, I know who I am, I know who you are, and I want to die, technically they would have to do it themselves, you know? You know, how do you do it? You know, I mean, I guess you could say, don't feed me anymore, you know. Really? Oh, my God. I don't know if I could do that. I guess there's different ways. You're saying, like, if you're incapacitated, you can, like, do something with your tongue. It's interesting, Esther, because your background is being with patients, and like, I've known a few people. I knew somebody who was older, and he had cancer, and he knew his cancer was pretty bad, but he was still fine when I was talking to him. But he told me, he said, hey, Dave, you know, basically, I'm dying. And he was in his 70s, and he was very matter-of-fact about it. I mean, he was just like, this is natural. This is what happens to people, and I'm dying. And I was, you know, kind of like upset, thinking, oh, no, I don't want him to die, right? But very interesting. When it got down, they did some surgery after that point, and they found, like, many tumors inside his lungs and this sort of thing. And they said, look, it looks – they sewed him back up. He came back to consciousness, right, with the family around, said, look, we looked in there. It looks really bad. But it's up to you. We can try to fight it. And at that point, his perspective changed. Before, he was really at peace with dying, kind of like we are, you know, well, some of us are saying now, oh, I'd want to die. But I think what's interesting, like what Esther said, is when you get to that point where it's like, okay, this is really it, a lot of people change their minds. And this guy who I'm talking about changed his mind. He said, okay, let's try to fight it. Let's try to keep me alive, basically, is what he said. So it's kind of interesting how people's perspective change when it really is that serious. Here, Chris.
Yes, you're the one living this experience. So I think you're the one who should decide, because nobody should decide for you, because they're not living the pain that you're living. And it should be always your own decision. Assisted, of course. I mean, with some rules.
Right, right. Well, what if you're unconscious?
Okay, that's... well, maybe if this decision should be taken before. I mean, in the test, I don't know. Honestly, yeah, I don't know.
That's the problem.
Yeah, my grandfather, he died 2 years ago, mm-hmm. but he had a cerebral accident, some bleeding in his
cerebral,
mm-hmm. so he couldn't use the right part of his body, something like that. And after he decided to die, but nobody, so he decided to not feed himself, yeah. And so he was not feeding himself. And when mm-hmm. they were putting the nails, you know, with the food,
IV?
He was like,
put
them away, and he died like that by starvation, something like
really?
That.
Wow.
And so he was a strong person, yeah. So he decided by himself that he wanted to die.
Okay, so you know that I think it gets much more complicated when you're talking about somebody who's unconscious. There was a case, Shivo. Do you remember that case? What was her first name? Her last name was Shivo. Anyway, she was a woman who was in a coma for about 10 years. Well, I shouldn't say a coma. She wasn't in a coma. She was like a vegetable state. So she would just kind of like sit here and look, and that was it. She couldn't have a conversation with anybody. Her eyes, you know, she was alive, but she was in a vegetable state. So if somebody's in a vegetable state, they can't say, hey, I want to die, I want to live, whatever. So, you know, who decides? Who should decide? Because that was a big case here. And it caused so many people got so angry about this. And do you know what happened with it? Well, we can't kill her. That's the thing. We can't. That's what Dr. Kevorkian did in terms of his assisted suicide. Was Dr. Kevorkian kind of put together or invented? I don't know if he invented them or he got the idea from somewhere else. But he put together systems so that people could kill themselves. So basically, like, maybe there would be an IV in my arm, right? And he would set up a system to where I pushed a button, and that button made this certain lethal liquid go into the IV, and then I died. So that's what Kevorkian was doing. But he was helping people who could kind of speak for themselves. But in the Shaivo case, this woman was a vegetable, you know, and half of the people wanted her to keep her alive. Half the people said, let her die. You know, it's a good thing to let her die. So who should decide in a case like that? She's a vegetable. What do you think, Jessica?
I would say maybe her closest relative to her, whether it's her husband or maybe her mom or any close relative that would take the decision. Would not maybe take the decision, but would be her strong opinion about it to the doctors. And maybe, I don't know, I don't think there is any other way that she could react to it, like whether she could move her eyes, whether when you talk to her,
no communication
at all.
She couldn't communicate.
Not even write, nothing.
No. I mean, they said that, they were saying that her mind was vegetable, meaning that there was... Frozen or dead, basically. I mean, there was no cognitive thinking. I mean, they can't prove that 100%, but actually after she died, they did an autopsy on her brain, and they did say that there was no active, her brain was not functioning at anything near a normal level. So you're saying the next, like the husband should decide, but this is the question I have you. Okay, so if the law is written, the next of kin, the closest person makes that decision. What if it is a husband? And let's say this wife came from a very rich family and she had lots of money, and that according to the laws in this state, when she dies, all of her money goes to her husband. So what if you have a case like this? And the husband, you know, maybe, you know, doesn't want the wife anymore. Maybe the wife, who knows, maybe the wife could come back, but he wants the money. So is that going to work? What do you think? What do you think, Christy? Yeah. I mean, should we have that law? Should a law exist that says the next of kin? It sounds like a good idea. I mean, the closest person. I mean, I guess I'd want the closest person in my life to make that decision. But then there's complications that come up into it. And one of the complications could be money. Maybe if my wife is ill and I stand to inherit millions of dollars, I would say, yep, let me sign right here. Let's pull the plug. Let's finish this up right now. So, yeah.
That's why, that's why physicians should review that before, just to check if it's really for the good of the person.
But how would the physician know it's for the good of the person?
Well, he knows how much pain she may does feel. I mean.
They can't really. I mean, they don't know how much pain a person who's in a vegetable state is feeling. They may be feeling no pain at all because they're in a vegetable state. We're not talking about pain.
Vegetable? Oh, okay.
Vegetable just means like I'm sitting here.
There are so many complicated things that we have to think, because for the family, they think about that life related with money or other financial system. And the other family, like mother or father, they think about the daughter herself. And the physician can evaluate the brain function. Is she really in vegetable state or in coma or brain death state? And we can collect all of the data, and because this is not a simple thing that just one person can make a decision. So in reality, we can get the data and bring it to judge, and the judge can decide. Because the judge is not the person who related with the benefit or demerit.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a very interesting point. Is to pull it out of the personal. So you're saying, like, have a judge get all the. That's a very scientific way of looking at it. Get all the information about data, all the physical things we know about the body, about that person's body. I guess take into consideration family as well, and then a judge, a third party, makes the decision. And then to play devil's advocate, I think the other side would say, what about the judge?
What about the judge if he believes against nausea, totally against, this can be useless. I mean,
I think one thing that would happen, maybe what you're thinking of, is that a family member could say, How could you let a judge make the decision about my family member? Like, this is my wife. You're going to decide if my wife lives or dies? She's my wife. So I think that would be the argument coming from the other side. And, and saying that, you know, this is I'm bonded to this person by marriage, by love, by family, by blood. And nobody has a right to tell, you know, me or who, when a human being. I think the difficult thing is here is who decides who gets to live and who gets to die? And who decides? You know, should a judge decide? Like in America, we have the death penalty, right, for crime. If you do very bad crime, you can get sentenced to death. You know, and that's decided by a court system. It's not decided by their family. Okay.
Actually, we are living under the law, and only the law can control the world, chaos or world's confusion, because we are not living under the religious control. So, only judge can decide that. And actually, I'm Christian. So in the Bible, Bible said, please do not judge others. But there is no other way so far.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting point. I mean, when you look at the world, and we need to control worlds and countries and people by laws, right? If we didn't have laws, we would have anarchy. And that's how we control. And maybe, like, it sounds like what you're saying is we don't have a better system than this right now. How else do you control people but by the law system? And I think that's a good point. And yeah, then you bring up the Bible. We're not supposed to judge, but then again, what do we do? If we don't judge, how can we have an ordered society? Maybe we would have violence going on all the time, and then we wouldn't judge anybody, so it poses a problem. Okay, so anyway, this is a tough issue. So our final thoughts on this are on euthanasia. So for or against? So let's go around the room and see who it is. Say your name and tell us if you're for or against.
My name is Jessica, and
you agree with it. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm for it. I do agree with euthanasia.
You agree with it, okay.
I'm Esther. I don't agree with euthanasia.
Okay. My name is Chris, and I agree with euthanasia.
Okay. My name is Christy. I agree with it.
Oh, Esther's all by herself. I feel like, I need to be on Esther's side to support. Yeah, it's a tough issue. I just think it's tough. And there's certain countries that have it. And then there's problems behind it. I think the bottom line is, either way you go, it's still difficult. But if I were to speak for myself, I would say, yeah, I would want to be able to do it. I would want to be able to end my life and to have somebody end my life for me. So there's the bright topic of the day was euthanasia. It's a difficult issue. Oh, you know what? One question before we wrap this one up. In your countries, because euthanasia is illegal in America, so I'm just curious, in your countries, can you tell me if it's legal or illegal?
Tell you the truth, I don't even remember. I'm not sure about it. Yeah, I'm not sure in Peru whether it's legal or illegal.
In Korea, it's illegal.
I think in France, it's illegal, but there has been a lot of cases like nurses that kill their patient because they feel pain for them. But I don't think they pursue them so much than here. It's not so mediatic, you know. People understand what someone feels. So
I'll get to you in a second. That's part of the argument, is that like nurses have, where it's legal, have killed like many patients. But they, you know, they think they're helping them, but then their families didn't want it done or something like this. And so it brings all that into it, you know, and like nurses that have like killed, you know, 50 patients or something like this. And it's very controversial. Yeah.
In America, there is a system that a patient can declare before he died. It means a DNR order, do not resuscitate. It means in case the patient has a serious respiratory or cardiac failure problem, then if the patient wants DNR, then the physician can't do anything. Just let the patient go.
Yeah, that's right. You even see that. Has anyone watched the television show ER? ER, that comes up a lot, you know, on that show, because if you have something traumatic happen to you and you're in a hospital, you could sign this release, just like Esther said, and it means I don't want you to keep me alive by a machine, basically. But they can't kill you. You can't say, oh my God, I just got shot 10 times. Kill me now, you know, shoot me one more time in the head. They won't do that, but they just won't put a machine on you to keep you alive. And in the Schiavo case, based on the laws in this country, they had to let her starve to death. They couldn't just end her life because we can't kill a human being. We had to let her die on her own. So anyway, interesting stuff. And then Christy, I guess your answer would be the same as Esther's, right? So just to hear your voice some more, because you've been a little quiet. So is it legal or illegal in Korea?
Illegal.
That's right. Very good answer. Okay, illegal. Okay, we're just going to pause for a moment, and then we're going to ask one of these small questions in a second. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. And okay, what we're dealing with here, we want to go in the direction of a little more fun, interest. Well, the last was interesting, but fun, more upbeat type of question. So this issue is relationships, and the question, actually, Chris came up with this question. And here, why don't you ask the question? Did you forget your question? Chris is like panicking. I mentioned his name, and he's looking around the room like, oh my God. Oh. Well, we don't know your last name. We don't know. You're all anonymous. Yeah. So don't worry about that. Yeah, so please tell. Please tell us a lot. Okay, so tell us your question.
So the question is, can you keep being friends with your ex?
So if you're in a relationship and then you break up, I guess it could be marriage too, but like boyfriend, girlfriend, and then you break up, can you be friends with your ex after you've broken up? So, that's a pretty good question. Okay, well, who wants to start here? Who wants to start out? Okay, Jessica. Here you go.
My answer to it is that I could be able to still be friends with my ex. I haven't experienced with that until these days. I'm still friends with two of my exes. And yeah, we're still friends. There's nothing wrong with it. My actual boyfriend, he's not that okay with it, but obviously. Right. But I do respect his side. I tell him like not to be jealous and all that.
But okay, so you contact them. Do you talk to them on the phone?
Yeah, email, I talk email, on the phone, webcam, audio. Sometimes really? We go out. Yeah, we really go out.
Do you ever do that when your boyfriend is in the same home or in the same room? Or
Oh no, they don't, obviously he doesn't like meeting them. He knows them, but he doesn't
would
like
you
meeting
talk
them.
To your ex on the phone with your boyfriend sitting in the same room.
Yeah, I would. I would. Yeah, so he sees that the way I'm talking to my ex is just friendship. There's nothing. Why would I hide? If I have nothing to hide, so he's okay there listening, looking that I'm not doing anything wrong, that I'm just talking to my friend. He's my friend now. And he respects that. It's like, that's my friendship and that's it. Nothing more.
But it does bother him.
At times it bothers him because I understand his side. He's like, don't talk too often with them. I'm here. You can give me time. So I just try. If it happens that my ex calls me on the phone and I answer and my boyfriend's right next to me, I tell him, we talk like for 1-2 minutes and I tell him like, can you call me another time because I'm busy right now and I don't want my boyfriend to get mad or anything like that. And they understand too. Okay. They're very understanding about that.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, yeah, you have some understanding people around you, which is good. I think some people, well, what do you think, Christy? You think it's okay to talk with your exes? I mean, exes, that could mean two. So what do you think? You think it's okay to talk with your ex-relationship entities?
I think talking to them by phone mm-hmm. or emailing is okay, but they should not meet.
They shouldn't meet in person?
No.
Why is that? What do you think?
It'll cause another relationship.
It'll cause another... You mean like they might get back together?
They might... I don't know, they might get together or not, but they will be closer than just friend. I don't think guy and female and male cannot be just friend as female and female. Mm. It'll be closer than that, so.
I think that's a really good point. This comes up, I mean, this is really something, the idea that can a man be friends with the female? And, of course, we're talking about something more specific. We're talking about X. But a lot of people believe that, you know, a guy cannot truly be friends with a girl. A guy is only interested in the sexual or the relationship aspect. And if he's saying he just wants to be friends, he's lying. He's not there to be friends. He's there for other things. Okay, Chris?
I don't agree with that because I have a good example in my family. My brother, he's like 16 years old, and all his friends are girls. I mean, best friend, girls, and they're just talking. Yeah, he's talking by phone and everything. I don't know how he do that, but because he's very, yeah, but he doesn't have girlfriends. I mean, it's just, they're just friends. Okay. I mean, it's all his friends are girls, almost. He doesn't go and play. Yeah.
Do you know for a fact that he's not interested in any of these girls in any type of sexual relationship type of way?
Well, maybe with one, but...
Well, could it be for two? Well, you're pretty sure, pretty sure.
Because a lot of her friends sometimes ask him if they want to become boyfriend and girlfriend. Usually he always say no. I mean...
He's 16, right? Maybe he's saying no because he likes having many, you know? And if he says yes to one, then he has to say goodbye to the rest. Oh, we're just guessing. We're just guessing. Okay. So other opinion about this. What do you think, Esther? Do you think that you can be friends with your exes?
I think I can't. Yeah. If it happens to me, then... I can't be friend again because he already hurt me a lot. And how can I recover from that that injury, from and that pain? So I can't be a friend. I think I can't request, please be my forever friend. I can't do that. And for the male and female friendship, is I think I can. It's possible. Especially if if we meet in the business field or school, then it is easy to keep the male and female friendship, not the girlfriend boyfriend relationship.
Okay. Okay, interesting. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting your answer because you said, well, that person hurt me. Of course, that happens a lot, but it's not necessarily like the guy's always hurting the girl, you know. I'm done with you now. Go away. No, it's not always like that. A lot of breakups are mutual too, you know. They just, you know, it's not that they're so angry. It's just it's not working anymore and let's move on and that sort of thing. I just see, you know, like some of us have been saying, I see a lot of problems come up. I think when you're in a relationship with somebody, you get to know them close. So whether it worked out or not, you were friends at that time, and then you break up. But then, you know, for a lot of people, I think there's an urge to continue that relationship because you were close to them, and you don't want to get that person out of your life unless they're a really negative force in your life. But the thing that I see is it just causes problems in the next stage. Like Jessica, you were saying, your current boyfriend is very understanding. So it bothers him maybe a little bit, but not too much. And he's pretty easygoing about it. And I think a lot of people would not feel that way. Most of what I've witnessed, something like this, people that I've known or people talk about this issue, whether it's guys or girls, I don't really like it if their current relationship, their boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife is talking to an ex. It usually causes problems, you know.
I think it also depends on the time that you've been with your ex, whether it's being like if you've been with your ex like for over a year or 2 years and they become just your friends, then obviously your current boyfriend is going to be like not that secure about that because you had a long relationship with that ex. So it also comes, it's also a question about like how can your current boyfriend be okay with their with you being friends with your ex now.
So you're saying like if I was only together with somebody for like 2 months, it's a big difference than 5 years or something like that, and more reason to be jealous. Oh, okay, yeah. I think a lot of people, you can tell me if you agree with me, a lot of people, for them, they think it's usually okay, but their significant other doesn't like it because the significant other doesn't know what's really going on. But I think also, like Christy brings up, I mean, it's so true that, you know, like if you meet them, you know, it's like, oh, you're meeting. Well, meeting, that one thing can lead to another, you know, so you could, it's easy to go back into a relationship or something. Depends on how strong you are. Yeah. Right. So I guess maybe our next topic could be like, okay, so if you did meet your ex and you're having a really good time and you cheated, would you tell your current relationship significant other person? I don't think we have time to get into that today, but I think it's kind of interesting. We can think about it for our next meeting. Because one philosophy is, look, okay, maybe I made a mistake and cheated, right? But if I told her, that's going to make things worse for her and me. So one realm of thought is, well, don't tell. Just move on with your life. You made a mistake and move on. And the other thing is about like honesty. It's like, oh, but we have this trust, you know, what about this trust? So you have to tell everything. So I guess the greater question is, do you tell everything or is it wiser to leave some things unsaid? So we'll leave that for our next podcast. And thank you all for coming. So a little round of applause for everybody. Yay! Thank you, Christy. Christopher, you can say thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
Oh, very nice.
And Jessica.
Thank you.
And Esther.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you next time on English Meeting. Thank you.